Christmas, Christmas,
well, it's Christmas time, pretty baby, and the snow is falling on the ground.
Christmas,
well, it's Christmas time, pretty baby, and the snow is falling down. No sleigh with reindeer, no sack on my back. You gonna see me coming in a big black Cadillac. Oh, your pretty stockings, turn off the light. Santa Claus is coming down your chimney tonight.
Yeah, so Christmas time, pretty baby. The King, Elvis Presley, back in the day when he was working with people like Carl Perkins, Roy Orbison, Sun Records, before Colonel Tom Parker got a hold of him. Christmas time, pretty baby, and the snow is falling on the ground in some parts of the country. Good evening. Jeff Bennett here for a Thursday night installment of The Edge of Darkness. I think this will be the last Thursday night we'll be in this time slot. Next week, we move. Time allowing, I'll fill you in at that again a little bit more later. We are facing things in this nation that we've discussed a lot. Things that I never honestly believed that I would see. Oh, I talked about them 20 plus odd years ago, but I spoke of them in manners that I thought we'd make a difference in the people, the listeners. Going back to the days we began on international shortwave radio, WWCR, Worldwide Christian Radio. And we expanded into satellite. And I continued with Worldwide Christian Radio until about mid-2005, which means I'd have been there for about 10 years. We began to, during that time period, we began a project with John Stadtmiller called Republic Radio International. We reached a point that John and I could no longer work together. We parted ways, but I continued on working with different networks, remaining with WWCR on my own. And I can't think of the names of some of the networks. It drives me crazy. There was a group up north that I thoroughly enjoyed working with. Then I worked with Joe McNeil. Back and forth with John Stadtmiller in variations of this network. Oh, I tolerated about 30 or 60 days of some broadcasting with Genesis Communications and realized it was nothing but money with them. Nothing but money, and they wanted a lot of it. No thanks. And yet, what's changed? Things have compounded. Things have become worse. And yet, truly, so much of the things we've talked about, and to some degree, some of the things we discussed on last night's program, America's fate, my friends, is ultimately in our hands. If we are supposed to be the shepherds and the owners of our government, we must reject entirely any push by these tyrants who manage to insert themselves into high office to abrogate our inalienable God-given rights, such as those enumerated in our discussion of last night, the Bill of Rights. Government. Any government can only exist and survive if we, the people, accept and allow it under honest circumstances. But given what has arisen in our election system of late, we cannot go on. And we must not go on until such time and only if our election system is repaired to a point where honest and free elections can be guaranteed. That has most usually always been the case. And yet I submit to you that whatever happens from this day forth, no free-born American should give his or her consent to any new regime that has been elected or stolen the seat of power to continue on with their insane Marxist, Maoist ideology, along with all the theft, the debt slavery, the economic failure, torture, misery, poverty, and war that goes hand in hand with their games. Personally, I generally see all government as a curse on humanity. Communism and the Islamic theocratic state are two forms of government that should never be given the slightest hope of survival in America. We need to pare our government down to size. And we need to do it in a manner where the country can still defend itself against foreign enemies. And that so much of the U.S. code would be thrown out, other than laws against the big crimes like rape and robbery and murder and financial fraud and other thefts of property. Now, friends, a great place to start would be ending the practice of taxing the American people's homes. Interesting subject. My wife and I had a discussion about that about an hour ago. The mother of our youngest granddaughter, Sophie, our son's daughter, she's in real estate now. She's taken her life down a good path. She knows that it is our goal to get out of this house, get out of this neighborhood, get out of this segment of town and all the crap that's going on in it that we don't wish to be a part of. And so she sends me lists almost every day, some things that have come up on the market in Sun City or Sun City West, which are typically retirement communities, 55 and older homes. You don't pay taxes for public schools because they don't support them. No, it's 55 and older communities. And I begin to look at the paperwork, and I see that, well, if you buy that house or this house or that neighborhood, you are going to pay a $5,000 fee. Now, do you ever get that fee back? What's that fee for? Well, it all has to do with community improvement. Might be the pool, might be the streets, might be the golf courses. Could be any number of things. I don't care about supporting golf courses. I have not had the time, the energy, or the inclination to play golf in many, many, many years. I began to look at some of the other fees. And I asked her, I said, Kales, what the hell's going on here? What are all these fees for? And I sit there and realized I looked at some property over in Mesa, Arizona. Opposite end of the valley. We're not out there. They're not as inundated with the illegals as we are at this end of town, which is creating the massive building of apartment complexes. So-called rent to own, or, you know, homes that are available for rental. They'll never be sold. 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes. And I look at those neighborhoods and say, where do people park their cars? There are no garages. There's no parking lots. Are people allowed to even own a car and live there? Well, given the invasion factors we've had going on in this country, you can well imagine who's going to be allowed to live there. And so I look at this commentary, ending the practice of taxing American people's homes. Any person truly seeking freedom should want to join with like-minded individuals to break the chains that bind us, my friends, making ourselves totally responsible for our own well-being. Reject the free health care that comes at great cost to everybody. Reject the massive militarized state police forces and police the people community by community with well-trained police and sheriff's departments whose numbers come from their community. Cease all government subsidies of big business and corporate America. End Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, unemployment insurance, and any other way that forces the people to allow government theft to pay for their obligations to themselves. Especially by voting for such theft. All of these things would open doors for private individuals to band together in private cooperatives in an immensely more economical fashion to provide services the government formerly had handled, but without costing 10 times as much, without the waste, the loss, the inefficiencies of government. Usually, private concerns can deliver the same government service far more efficiently, a whole lot cheaper. But the government won't allow those things in too many instances because it does not like the competition or being seen as unnecessary. In large part, it was the reason authorities in Portland, Oregon halted local churches from feeding the poor and homeless as they had been doing in previous years. You know, when one's life is solely their own responsibility in every manner, so that one's only primary driving motivator is to take care of oneself or die, and government has no say-so in how one accomplishes all of that, so long as one does no harm to others, then and only then will a person be truly free. If America does finally fall to her enemies, it will not be the fault of those of us who deeply love America and have pledged our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor to defend her. Commentary, my friend Justin O. Smith. And what I've just shared with you is going to be the first part of a continued saga, as it were, that we'll be sharing with you next week. Interesting. I don't want that. Listen to this. Given the conversation we've just had, the headline that popped up early this morning in the form of a question. American workers, are you happy to pay $1,800 each to wipe the student debt of the privileged elite who will earn $52,000 a year? $18,000 apiece. This is the bill that we are going to pay for Joe Biden's naked bribe for votes. Congratulations. I erased your student loans. Now, will you vote for me? Why does he just openly say it? That's what he should have said in an email to 800,000 student loan borrowers, because his latest scheme to forgive some of their $1.78 trillion in outstanding debts is nothing more than a bribe. It's an outrageous sum of money. An outrageous sum of money. And you and I are going to take for it. And some of us never had kids in college that we may have been strapped with their debt. My eldest granddaughter, my Tater, the mother of my three-month-old great-granddaughter, today, by the way, she graduated Arizona State University without one penny of debt, not one. Therefore, you won't be paying for her schooling. I won't be paying for it. It's unbelievable. The stories go on. Michael, in answer to your question, the answer is probably no. I want to take a few minutes and go down a path that I rarely go down. I woke this morning, or maybe I went to sleep last night without realizing that what's-his-name had died at the age of 100. Kissinger. Never trusted him. Not because of his religious bent, his political background, but he is what so many in our political world made of themselves. Scum. I've often commented that during my own lifetime, and yeah, I've gotten mixed feelings about Eisenhower, but we certainly had a far more calm 8 years under his circumstances. And then we had JFK. Didn't last for long. He was making some good moves. I'm not talking about Marilyn Monroe and some of the other babes he was hooking up with, but he was taken out for a reason. We contributed a far greater amount of time on that 60-year-old story about the death of Kennedy last week during that anniversary. Nixon was an utter politician. Ultimately, we wound up with George Bush Sr., George Bush Jr., Bill Clinton. In my lifetime, I think I can say that Ronald Reagan was probably one of the most decent human beings that served in the White House. The guy had a good sense of humor. Knew how to work with people. But they sent him his message as well. There was another man who was our president who is continually berated for being one of the worst presidents in this country. And yet I found her to be a very interesting human being. Too many times, those who take office are controlled. I mean, look at Biden. Come on. Joe Biden didn't win the election. I'm not going to sit there and say Trump won it either. Because the fact of the matter is, in either case, it's we, the people, that have lost the election for so long. But there was a man who served in this country as president. The peanut butter farmer. For 4 years. And when he left office, he was still a decent human being. And he continued to devote so much of his life trying to help other people. Habitat for Humanity is amazing. You never saw another former president lift a finger to get involved with any of that kind of stuff. And this week, Jimmy Carter, who's near the end of his life, lost his wife, his partner of nearly 8 decades. That's a subject I don't approach, but it's one that got to me for a number of reasons. Former First Lady Rosalynn Carter died on the 19th of this month, 96 years of age, with her husband, former President Jimmy Carter. He himself turned 99 last month. She passed away at their home in Georgia. And they recently celebrated their 77th wedding anniversary this past summer. And by then, it had already been the longest married presidential couple in the United States history for quite some time. And in the wake of Rosalynn Carter's death, new details emerged about her final moments, the former president's devotion throughout them. And their son, James E. Carter III, known as Chip, detailed his parents' last days together in comments that were published on November 23rd. And he said that his father sat beside Rosalynn Carter's bed in his wheelchair on Saturday night as other family members gathered in their bedroom. Chip said, "My dad told her he loved her and thanked her for all the wonderful things she had done." And afterwards, he asked the rest of the family to leave so she could be alone with her. 2 days ago, a former president attended his wife's memorial service in Atlanta and listened as their daughter Amy read aloud a letter that Jimmy had written to Rosalynn 75 years ago when he was in the Navy. And in that letter, he said, "My darling, every time I've ever been away from you, I've been thrilled when I return to discover just how wonderful you are. Goodbye, darling. Until tomorrow." Signed, Jimmy. I don't need to share anything more about this story than what I've shared with you just now. Well, there's a little bit more to it, and I invite you to go read it. We have it published at both Federal Observer and at Metropolis.cafe. Why Metropolis.cafe? That all has to do with education. Because we have a section of that website referred to as Profiles. Talks about people who have been part of our history. Interesting, interesting life. Interesting people. Man who won a Nobel Prize. Nobel Peace Prize. How many of our world leaders, how many presidents in this country ever won the Nobel Peace Prize? Most of them shouldn't. and they shouldn't even be considered for it. May you rest in peace, dear Rosalind Carter. Jimmy will be with you soon. That is an exceptional rarity that I ever touch on a subject of that matter. But it affected me. I didn't feel that way when Reagan's wife passed away. Strange woman. Didn't feel that way too much when any of our leaders during my lifetime had passed away. Kennedy, that affected me. I understand that my family were all Republicans. They all voted Republicans their entire life. And as a youngster, you tend to think that your parents are right. You tend to lean in that direction, but there were times I couldn't do that. Within my own heart, my own mind, I continued to follow the words of my fifth grade teacher, Donald Adair, who told me to not ever stop searching for truth. Whether it was right, whether it was wrong, was not important. I chose to never stop searching for truth. Oh, there are some of those of you out there who may disagree with me. I received a strange email from someone yesterday who is an alleged listener to the network. Took offense to some comments that were made by another broadcaster on this network. And then attacked me in the email for having taken similar stances, which I disagree with. That means the individual was not listening to what I was talking about. Doesn't matter who the other broadcaster is. Each one of us has got a right to stand on our own two feet, discuss what we believe in. As relates to my opinions of what continues to go on in this insane world that we look at in the Middle East, Israel, Palestine, the Hamasians, all the rest of the insanity. Real simple terms. I've studied history. I've read history. I've searched for truth. There were times where I had maps that were printed so many hundreds of years ago. One of the dates escapes me right now. Maps that were that specifically showed and depicted this land called Palestine. I'm not sticking up for them. In many respects, they've stood up for themselves. But as with any group, there's good, bad, and ugly with all of them. Come on. Look at the Republicans. Look at the Democrats who got good, bad, and ugly here as well. It all sickens one after a while. That's certainly what it's done to me. So no, I don't support Israel. I don't support Palestine, Iran, Iraq. But then I don't support the fact that we managed to somehow keep sticking our damn nose into everyone else's business, financially and otherwise. It's time, long past time, to change the direction. We cannot continue to open the doors and let millions upon millions of illegals come into this country Once again, we're back on the election game. Let them in. Make sure they can get jobs. Make sure they can get EBT cards and whatever the hell else they get. Free education, free health care, et cetera, et cetera. With the hope that those people are going to vote for members of the Democrat Party. Either way, we're all going to lose. Power. Lord Acton once said, power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts. Absolutely. Great men are almost always bad men, even when they exercise influence and not authority. And yet still more when you super add the tendency or the certainty of corruption by authority. You see, my friends, we tend to get what they give us. There was a power shift in America. You remember when it began? When the first colonizers landed. And it continues today. It will continue in perpetuity. That is how power works. But it's boundless, because the pursuit of power is an addiction. Insatiable. Unquenchable. Began with the European supercilious attitude that everything was theirs for the taking, just like every other powerful country at that time. And these invaders claimed sovereignty of this continent when they stepped ashore, setting the precedent for the next 400 odd years. Oh, it was not just North America. The world suffered outrageous colonization at their hands. At one point, the British boasted that the sun never set on their empire. And I've shared with you so many times the real meaning of that. No, the sun didn't set on their empire, because it was not a segment of the globe that the British weren't embedded militarily, governmentally, economically. But there were other European countries like France. Oh, they followed suit to increase their empires in North America. I mean, it's a tradition we continue here to this day, but with some very special refinements, of course. And the refinements? If the government wants your land, baby, they take it. Because Big Brother invented a legal process called eminent domain to rationalize appropriating private property. You see, the term eminent domain is an exercise of the power of government or quasi-government agencies. You know, like airport authorities, highway commissions, community development agencies, and let's not forget utility companies. Each and every one of them takes private property for their so-called public use. The end justifies the means, doesn't it? It is a super rationalization that grants license to commit legal, immoral, and unethical acts in the name of progress. The acquisition of power. Well, Lord Acton's quote offers a glimmer of hope with his qualifier. Almost always. Indicating the possibility of ethical and moral leaders. Oh, we all have our favorite leaders in recent centuries, both good and bad. A few immediately come to mind, and yet our rush to judgment must be tempered by the person's leadership acumen and their accomplishments. Not their foibles, not their peccadillos. And yet these eccentricities are all integral to the person. So how do you evaluate them? That's up to you. A pivotal historical event assured the shift, but we'll talk about that a little later, time allowing. Everything that followed that epic action confirmed the power shift that we endure today. Of course, arresting this shift will require resources that America is reluctant to invest in and steps that we are unwilling to take unless enormous power is involved. What megalomaniac would willingly relinquish control? I mean, come on. Imagine trying to take a steak away from a Rottweiler. That's an apropos analogy. But here we are, sitting smack dab in the middle of the 21st century. And these first 24 years have not bode well for the good guys. Meaning we're the good guys, assuming, right? I mean, I think we're losing ground. Can Americans turn things around? Can we, the people, turn things around? Well, we can make the change if that's what we really, really wanted. But then one has to keep in mind there's a chance that pigs will fly and monkeys may fly out of my, well, you know what. But then I'm a realist. Poo-poo-pa-doo. You know, it's an obese possibility. And those are polite words for the term fat chance. It's a fat chance that the power shift in America will reverse. Oh, oh, oh. No, I think it's only going to get worse. Because that's the path that we're on. 1991. Alvin Toffler published a book titled Power Shift. Knowledge, Wealth, and Violence at the Edge of the 21st Century. And in his book, he argued that while headlines focused on shifts of power globally, equally significant shifts are taking place in the everyday world that we all inhabit. The world of supermarkets and hospitals and banks and business offices, television, portable communication devices, politics, personal life. The very nature of power is changing before our very eyes. And so just over three decades ago, Toffler stated that information would be the fundamental tool of change and that whoever controlled that information would, by manipulating said information, transform and eventually dominate the world. Ta-da! What we have here is a failure to communicate. You know, it's been proposed that we crown Ms. Karine Jean-Pierre Miss Communication. Note the intentional double entendre of this crowning, Miss Communication and Miscommunication. That's called a homophone. H-O-M-O-P-H-O-N-E. Do you know who I'm talking about? Ms. Karine Jean-Pierre? Today, my friends, we have access to more information than we could possibly consume in five lifetimes. And yet we still want more. and more and more. Because we believe that knowledge is power, but knowledge without comprehension, my friends, is useless. We know it's wrong, but we consider ourselves powerless to alter the course. Oh, we had the ability to change it, but we surrendered that right when we turned our backs on constitutional, fair, and impartial election processes. Yeah, we turned our backs. Maybe our banks, we did that too. We've reached a point, my friends, that we want information faster because we're busier. We believe we have less time. We think it's important to stay informed and connected. And because we're so damn busy, we let someone else prioritize and interpret the data for us. We get what they give us. Any fool can know. In the words of Albert Einstein, the point is not just to know, but to understand. Let me consider giving you an assignment to prove this assertion. Go to your favorite news outlet, select any random video, something 2 or 3 minutes long. Turn the sound off. Don't listen. Just watch. Make notes of your impression. What did you just see? Now rewatch the same video with the sound on. How different are your impressions from just watching? And now that you've listened to what you're told that you just saw. Interesting, isn't it? You see, we become aware that, no, we haven't become. We are unaware. We're unaware that what we see is not what they want us to know. The images and the titles are props to establish their point. The narration guides and embellishes your impressions and understanding of the news piece. We get what they give us and want us to know. And so the phrase, a picture is worth 1,000 words, was invented by an advertising executive in 1913. He first wrote that phrase in the advertising trade journal called Printer's Ink, promoting the use of images in advertisements that appeared on the sides of streetcars. And so when someone tells you what you see, you have the complete informational power shift. You may distrust or not comprehend what you see, so you rely on the commentator to explain the actual impact on you. And that, my friends, is the magic. You believe what you see as interpreted by a talking head reading a carefully prepared script written by the corporate communications department, programming you to think as they think and follow their version of the event. And so, since a picture is worth 1,000 words, the interpretive embellishment is where the power abides. Oh, well-written stories can convince you that your eyes deceive you and that your perceptions of that image are bogus. Oh, yeah, they got that power. I mean, when people see an image of Trump, they instantly hate or pity him. Few are ambivalent. He's done nothing to any one of us, but our impressions are biased and entirely swayed by the media industrial complex. They decide what and how to portray the events to support the narrative dictated by their political leanings. We get what they give us. How in the hell did we get here? Well, this power shift began in earnest with the assassination of John F. Kennedy. The CIA proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that it could murder a sitting president on television with an astonished and bewildered world watching and successfully covered up. And in a matter of hours, the plot was established. And in a few days, they defined the dastardly deed. A few days later, the culprit was apprehended and murdered while in police custody in the police department transfer area. And so a credible story was created to support the heinous actions of the assassin. And the alleged perpetrator's movements were mapped. His sniper's nest was discovered. The weapon was identified. The investigating agencies uncovering damning evidence all pointed to the solo player, slayer. And every single story surrounding that event was carefully crafted to direct the public to facts outlined by the exhausting media mob coverage, speculation, subsequent investigations and input by the CIA. And up to that point in 1963, the CIA and the FBI were unblemished and infallible. But it was many years later that we began to question their integrity. No one dared question the premier investigative agencies in America. And so then a few independent investigative journalists speculated and refuted the claims of the lone gunman. And forensic and physical evidence challenged the CIA and the FBI assertions. The path of the magic bullet defied physics, and yet the Department of Justice maintained its position for over 60 years. And exposing the weaponization of government agencies and their complicity in the multiple nefarious enterprises tends to shed light on these previous deeds. And thankfully, some media sources reported opposing views and interpretations. But the truth was somewhere in the middle of this information. That's the dodge the media industrial complex intends. If you really want the truth, it's up to you, the reader, to discriminate, to differentiate, to decide. But a simple principle attributed to William of Ockham of the 14th century says that if you have competing ideas explaining the same phenomenon or event, you should prefer the simpler one, which is known as Ockham's razor. Ockham's razor. William of Ockham described it this way. He said, "No more things should be presumed to exist that are absolutely necessary. In other words, the fewer assumptions an explanation of a phenomenon depends on, the better the explanation." My friends, the probability of a single individual having the knowledge and skill to assassinate a president stretches all credibilities. The executioner would need detailed information, not usually available to the public. And then consider that the presidential parade route was changed at the last minute. Who had access to that? Even if it was publicized in the press, how quickly could the accused assailant adapt his plans? Thanks to the relentless pursuit of the truth, we learn more facts 60 years later. Now more people are discovering the truth and comprehending the depth of the corruption within the DOJ, FBI, CIA, NSA, and other alphabetically named agencies. Come on, it's simple. Toto pulled back the curtain. But we were warned to ignore the man behind it. Kennedy's assassination was the test of the conspiracy's power and the ability to manipulate public opinion through the media industrial complex and their governmental power partners in the military industrial congressional complex. And that weaponization within the halls of government set the stage for the coup d'etat that we are watching unfold today. The demonization of the other party is only the beginning of this treacherous plot to subvert the Republic. Over 14 million illegal invaders or more are in our country through a secured and controlled system of borders. Now Big Brother has a phone application allowing illicit immigrants to schedule an escort through the point of entry, or POE, and be treated royally with transportation, lodging, money, and credentials to assume their new life in Merca at our expense. At our expense! Beginning in 1787, America became a constitutional republic. And our abandonment of the Constitution makes Merca a plutocracy at the mercy of partisan politicians in the pockets of the wealthy. My friends, every major event in the past 60 years smacks of media-industrial complex complicity, been carefully shepherded by the military-industrial congressional complex and their plutocratic overlords. And this alliance between our government and private enterprise is the foundation of the power shift in this country. It's apparent when you read and hear the disparities between the media-industrial complex and the so-called independent news sources. You feel the split in the partisan political parties and discern the mile-wide aisle between the Democrats and Republicans. Their battles concern power rather than what's best for our republic and its citizens. As Toffler suggested, information is a club, a lever, a tool used to amass influence and sovereignty. It is a cudgel of protection and persuasion. It's no longer about betterment, but impairment to keep people thinking along party lines no matter the cost. And it's oh so damn simple. You've got to remember the end justifies the means, especially when that end is power. Charles Dickens. Now, we've got but a few minutes left. New broadcasting time starts next week. I will no longer be broadcasting live during this time set. The Edge of Darkness will still be heard three nights a week, but we'll be on 2 hours from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I'll let you figure it out. I can't think of the times right now. We'll be here Tuesday through Thursday, still on a Republic Broadcasting Network.
Hot diggity dog, dang it. I get to go on the air 3 hours earlier in the day than I have been.
And you get to listen to me banter and raise holy hell for 2 hours a day. All we're trying to do is wake up one lousy listener at a time. And those people out there listening tonight, well, we certainly are thankful. But for what? Just because we have an audience? Well, that's nice. It becomes far more thankful if we find out that we, the people, are finally acting to benefit the nation as a whole. We're hearing, reading more and more congressional leaders have made a decision to step down and not run for re-election. I wonder how much they're getting paid to do that. Yeah. Guaranteed it ain't cheap. I hope that we've challenged you a bit tonight to think to act outside the parameters of an hour's worth of entertainment, as it were, becomes amazingly important to understand why we do what we do. I don't think for a second that it's designed to reach more, although that would be nice. I think that what we do here is designed to reach those who we were meant to reach. If we can pick up a few more that are willing to listen and say, oh me holy, then we go from there. Anyway, we're out of time. You take care of yourselves. I'll see you next Tuesday night, a few hours early. Hope you'll be there. Take care of yourselves without apology. I am Jeffrey Bennett. Run, run, Rudolph. Santa's got to make it to town. Santa, make him hurry. Tell him he can take the freeway down. Run, run, Rudolph, because I'm reeling like a merry-go-round. Said Santa to a boy child, what have you been longing for? All I want for Christmas is a rock and roll.
Gonna wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio. only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.